Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a research paper that I'm writing. It's called Authentic Internet of Things School Demonstration. Now, this is unusual to give a podcast, but look, I'm sort of in the mode of pumping out podcasts, but also I've got sort of an audience which might listen to it a bit more. This is Michael, who will look at the actual overall structure. So the Michael is sort of a consultant who comes back and sort of looks at the big picture structure. And the big picture structure I'm looking at is, yeah, I can see what I'm doing is researching. It's sort of para-research, and it's outside, and it's got the audience is complex, and so the audience needs a complex introduction. So this is the theory, just the reading of the introduction. There's Professor John Canning in chemistry. He'll be interested, I suppose, in just learning about the senses and how, you know, one of these devices could actually be quite useful in the chemistry laboratory. So there'll be an interest there. The Professor Simon Fleming be interested in that. He's into polymer fibre and deep into this. Is only 2 pages long, so it shouldn't be too long of a podcast. There's the use of polymer fibre, which sort of glows along the length of it, so that you can demonstrate the path of data in a device, sort of a teaching application of it. So there's the polymer fibre and how that industry has evolved and where we've moved it onto. So I'm going to read this, and I'll stop and comment and hopefully it's okay. And put it across. I'll just get my glasses on. I'm out here in the sun reading along. Okay, so the title is The Authentic Internet of Things School Demonstration. The author is Peter Colin Hill, Glenbrook, New South Wales, Australia. Now, do I do Education Department or do I do the Glenbrook Advanced Institute? Advanced Concept Institute. I don't know what I'll do for that. Okay, the abstract. So we'll sort of discuss the journal that it goes into. I've looked at teaching articles, and they're not of the same order of rigor and citation. It's sort of like they play the citation game, but the citations are just, you know, echoing of who said what, and it sort of doesn't go underneath. You'll hear a bit later on. Okay, the abstract. The progress of a production prototype of a personal wireless power and communication sensor module is reported. Its features and how they would play out in today's classroom are discussed. So that's just the abstract of it. Okay, here's the introduction. This paper gives a snapshot of the development of a 14 sensor module. That's times 10 temperature, times 3 into 1 mass, times 2 pressure, and a pH sensor. Envisioned for high school. Perhaps high school use, I suppose. But for high school. Called the utility box, in brackets UB, the name leverages on the concept of an utility belt established in popular culture. Okay, so this is for kids, and we've got to get across. Wireless and battery powered, the sensors are deployed and the results streamed to a website. The quote, working conjecture of the UB's role in enhanced learning is based on a model of use in which sensors are more integral than additional to experimental design. So what I really mean is that when you're building your experiment, you put in the sensors right away, and you, rather than build your experiment, then put your sensors in afterwards. I don't know how I can express that a bit better. I'll also forward you the actual document. The student takes a UB, selects and places sensors on an experiment as it is built. Then instruction and discussion occurs about the experiment. Then the student assesses the data that has been continuously streaming to the online location, in brackets I've got URL. So just a bit more explaining here that if someone's put sensors and temperature sensors, they then take instructions and then they can say, oh, look, that sensor will work, it won't work. Oh, that's going to do it. They're thinking of the sensors as they're doing the learning. Okay. So that's the first paragraph of the introduction. It's a long introduction, two pages of introduction. The development involves implementing what is technically and commercially possible with feedback from a variety of groups, teachers, scientists, and students. To frame this snapshot, this introduction picks out the appropriate themes for each group. So this is the first sort of header, the introduction to the introduction. And the first paragraph says this paper is a snapshot. And the second paragraph is to frame this snapshot in this introduction. So there's sort of a sub-introduction called teacher introduction. Now, just to give you an idea is that when you really analyze, teachers are not in the same realm as scientists going through. And bespoke in our area, teachers have, when they want to talk about something, they've got endless parameters and lists which they just go through eventually, and there's sort of a feeling of exhaustion that you've gone through. You've ticked the boxes everywhere, and so they've got three boxes to tick, which will be in three paragraphs. Now, this is actually the teacher standards. So the teacher standards is divided into three streams, the same standard for three different directions. Now, practicing teachers may have in mind students, groups, or stages for whom the immediacy and lower cognitive overhead would strengthen the significance of measurements. So we might need to explain that, the lower cognitive overhead of just whacking the sensors on and working. So we may add that. Practicing teachers will likely also be interested in case studies emerge showing that having all properties measured in parallel in one module supports the conceptualization of all properties in parallel in the student's understanding. And this is a major, major point, that there's this big aha moment that you get, and the students, this is me giving additional to this paper, the students learn about temperature, they learn about mass, and then there's a next step up of temperature and mass and pH all integrated together. So they sort of come and learn right about one, and they don't integrate it together. But so this is a quick big question. Now, my device of saying, not making a claim, but just saying people would be interested in it, this is introduction. If this benefit is realized, how does it manifest for students of different ability and prior knowledge levels? That is, some with low cognitive ability can just see a box and temperature sensors, they're not distracted, where someone with very high ability can start to say, well, what if you put more sensors? Can we put more on? They're asking. So this is a question. Now, the second tranche, the experienced teachers, if we're practice teachers, the experienced teacher will probably know the detail of acquiring, storing, using and maintaining a range of solutions from bulb thermometers to various digital data logging offerings. The ability to charge while stacked like meal pages in restaurants would be a significant reliability features, particularly as the units would be powered and wirelessly reported while stored. So this is a major point for someone, I've got boxes there. Well, the boxes can report online to you that they're ready to go. That's a major difference between a drawer full of thermometers or a set of boxes with things. You don't know what's there. These are long alive. The potential for interested students to go to a website, order the parts as they would for a school robotics project and build the module as an extracurricular project speaks to the experienced teacher's insight into how each aspect of the classroom has emerged. Dreadful sentence. Michael, you really have to get in and do that, break it apart. So, in general, students already can, without guidance, be given websites and produce robots. Why not produce this? It's a general thing. Now, the third area had practicing teachers, experienced teachers. As senior leadership teachers may see the value of having a module in a clear box, the components clearly separated as an avenue for general training in the emergence Internet of Things. So this is, rather than the particular thing, this is the general, countrywide strategic thing we want our students to learn about the Internet of Things. It is analogous to a training aircraft built around the idea of instruction, but not optimized for carrying cargo or passengers. So, you know, this ultimately what we're trying to build is a training device. Okay, we're not trying to build a commercial device. Okay, now we've got teachers, now scientists. Now, the critical point thing is here where I'm reading the articles from education journals and saying, this citation is, they just randomly quote, to cite someone, they just randomly quote someone's article. And it's almost like a stream of consciousness going into the middle of a video and catching, it's really quoting out of context. They're citing out of context. Okay, so I speak here. Scientists have in mind the role of citation of earlier work and if this document could be cited. We're going to have to engineer that to be a bit more precise. So, for scientists for producing scientific literature, ensure that what they're reading is cited, it's of no value, and then whether this device can be cited. Now, if not, in brackets, not be cited, it could be a popular science communication or a technical report being relevant but not scientifically significant. Okay, so if it can't be cited, if you can't cite it, you've got to get into what is the scientific significance. It's sort of a two-way speech. So if I write a report on the solar flux at a particular point, say the amount of light coming in here on a particular day, I can't publish that. That's a piece of scientific data. But it can rely on citations and stuff like that to make sure it's credentialing it. Or I could be explaining something to someone, and so I have to rely on quality science, but my explanation is not there. Correspondingly, if it's not new, if I do some research which is groundbreaking in 1920, that very same research is no longer scientifically relevant in 2020 due to the citation thing. So you really have to lose that. Okay, now, because the UB demonstration seeks to be authentic, it employs best practice at low cost. This technology is not novel. So the aim is, we're not trying to be novel here, we're trying to be low cost and reliable and its implementation. It does, however, mark a development in the established trend of bringing integrated circuits, chips, closer to the sensor. So it's sort of like, it's a report, it's a trend going forward. An example of this trend used in the UB is the DS18B20 temperature sensor. It is a silicon chip in a 5mm epoxy D having package, so having a ground, 5-volt and data wire. Each has a 64-bit factory set identifier, allowing an arbitrary number to be bused to a single digital input. Conceptually, the UB does the same, reporting an ID plus data packet to a server that gets routed to a base URL. So it's the same theme of the internet. It's sort of like it's where I'm from and the data, and that's done in the internet. So this is done in parallel. So it's done conceptually. The UB does also. Thus, it is clear that the strategy template of silicon moving downstream to the sensors is not original. However, the application may be significant in the context of a more general aggregate trends. A textbook example is Moore's Law, a 1965 prediction that the doubling of the number of components is in an integrated circuit in every 18 months. Again, Michael, you're going to have to see if you can re-engineer it. It has held for over 60 years to the present. The idea of technology trends means that a current high technological watermark is seen in a historical context, allowing development to be projected for different forward estimates. I don't know. So this high, is to be calculated in trend what that high watermark means in here. So perhaps, you know, what does it mean here? Does it mean that we're building a box? Can we build something else? You know, it's, you know, what's going to go is a general thing. The flip side, so that really needs a lot of engineering to get that clear. The flip side of the more scientific analysis of aggregate technology trends is that there are many competing players and technologies that contribute a significant embodiment that drives development but ultimately does not survive. Okay, an example might be VHS and Beta or audio cassette tapes. Thus, this snapshot informs trends in the education sector, but further consideration would be necessary to say that the UB will be a direct descendant of what is found in the classroom of 60 years' time. So you can see the sort of the intellect coming back, but you know, it's taking weeks and days to get there. I normally get there, and it requires a lot of engineering. So I hope people can see that, and of course, I hope John Canning could see it here. Now, the student introduction. So this, yeah, and this is one of the things where I'm going, and it's sort of like breaking up the introduction. In the development stage of the UB, student inquiry generates a dialogue in which the answers guide the development, most often indirectly. Okay, now this is a bit hard. So I then have a table here. Student question, design response. So I'm going to start off with student question and design response. I'm going to say the word first. It's in a table. Okay, student question, what's inside? Design response, make the box transparent, hinged open. So you can hinge open and see it. What is that? Student question, what is that part? Design response, label the parts. Labels glow in sync to an audio description. So what happens is that you can go to a website, press on a play command, and as a play command, as it goes through, as the website goes through play, it sends out commands back to the internet, back to your box, and so the box actually begins to glow as you talk about it, as it talks through. Student question, what does that part do? Have function labels. So it says blah, 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 chips, measures the temperature. Load sensors, measures the mass, the things. How does the data flow? Use side glow optical cables. So there's these polymer cables which produce a line of light, so you can actually see the line go through the optical fiber. Follow direction out to the internet, so you can see the power, the mass goes from the sensors to the A to D's, from the A to D's to the PLCs, from the PLCs to the ESP, the internet broadcasting, then out the antenna. So that's something to do. It's probably too small to actually get. Where does the power come from? Is the student question. There's a design response. This is the color code conventions of all wiring. So the students can see a battery, and out of it comes a red and black wire. And then they can see right throughout the system the red and black wire going to here, there, and everywhere. What happens when an event? What happens when it reaches to such and such? So what you can now do is set alarms on your internet site saying when it reaches 100 degrees, beep twice, things like that. And so they can go along and their device is separate. So these are all design developments due to the student interaction. So what we're really saying is that for teachers, we want to frame it to say that we've got everything that we understand covered. For scientists, we want to say we're not in the thing of making outlandish claims, we're making realistic claims, but nonetheless there is an element of scientific interest because this is cutting edge, and therefore can we engage with you. Then for students, we're saying look, your introduction to this is for you to ask questions, and it will develop along the line of your questions. So if you've got a question, a positive answer, the most positive answer is the design direction. Okay, so something stupid is something we won't do. The answer you like most is what we're necessarily going to do. However, we'll just conclude this section. Currently, students have access to a range of transparent boxes containing magnetism and quantum physics demonstrations, and their Fairbit guides development focus into different implementations. So, just to explain, we have the dancing duck. Now, one of the things is that people want to make it fun. So, and I want to introduce capacitive sensors and stuff like that. So what I'm going to do is have a capacitive sensor. So as you move your finger up and to an area, the duck begins dancing. Okay, it's not dancing all the time. It's not switching. So there's an area of interactivity. Or if you press the finger on another section, it quacks, or you know, it does those two things. Or you press the fingers to both, it dances and quacks. That way, you've got different levels of understanding, or you can then on the top of it send put a slide variable resistor where it measures the voltage, which determines the range which your capacitive sensor goes. So it's sort of embedding all this technology across there. Now that sort of requirement to do things can be put not in this unit but in other units. If you understand, there's a family of units being developed where the feedback goes into different regimes. So that's the limit of this podcast. So I hope that it's well received. So reliably, we'll get a few people's feedback on it, and just to remind people listening to it, and even say people listening overseas to this who want to feedback on it, it's send me an email on Dr. Hill Teach, DrHillTeach at gmail.com, just say podcast response, and I'll get a few podcast responses, and we'll see how this goes. Because the advantage of people get really dyed in the bum looking at documents and stuff like that, and documents have to get to a certain point, and we'll go here again. Strategically, we're looking at the fact that it's not necessarily a science. It's not straight out of science. It's a science inspired thing. It's to go into schools, but to go into schools, you've got all these different stakeholders. So basically, it's a marketing thing to go across, and essentially, it's all there, and it's essentially as I've developed various things, they can sort of go in the back burner for a while, and I can work on the research papers. So hoping to hear from you, particularly Michael, John and Simon, and perhaps anyone else out in podcast in the land. Of, I think there will be 10 or at maximum 100 people who will listen to this, and one or two people feeding back will be really great, especially if we can get this is a although it's an Australian context, it's really a global move, to get this going. So I'd be pleased to share it with you. Thanks for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.